Welcome to episode 18 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We're discussing this week the Arnold Palmer Invitational on the PGA Tour. Only one event this week. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me is our European Tour expert, Paul Williams, and our resident podcast pundit, Barry O'Hanrahan from a Good Talk Sport podcast. Evening, gentlemen, how are we?
Evening, Steve. Evening, Barry. I'm well. How are you guys?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Steve. Pretty good. A little bit disappointed by my pick last week, but see what we can go, what we can do this week. We got a nice bonus in the Tiger Show over the weekend, so it can't always be about the bets, I suppose, or at least that's what you tell yourself when years have died. So that's the way I got my enjoyment out of the tournament.
It was good last week. Yeah, it's a fascinating time at the moment in terms of golf. I think a little bit of housekeeping, then we'll move into some detail. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. Search Golf Betting System, Golf Betting Tips, something along those lines. You'll come across our website. My Twitter handle is Steve Bamford, at Bamford Golf. Paul Williams at Golf Betting, and Barry is available at A Good Talk Golf. Now, a thank you to listeners, especially those on iTunes. We've now broken through the threshold in terms of iTunes reviews, a score of 4.5, which we're very, very pleased with. But I will keep saying this each and every week. If you're listening to this on iTunes and you would like to leave a review, we would really appreciate it. That also goes for you listening on Podbean. Any likes and subscribes are most welcome. It was interesting last week. I think we had 5 or 6 subscribers on Podbean, which is the best week we've had. Keep those numbers going. It just spreads the word. And clearly, the more people we have listening to this podcast, the better for all concerned. Right. I'm quickly going to ask Paul, because I know that Paul has been knee-deep in Cheltenham Festival 2018 bookmaker promotions this morning and across the weekend. Can you just highlight, and clearly we're a golf betting podcast, I understand that, but I know that listeners in the UK and the Republic of Ireland will be looking forward to 4 great days of racing across Tuesday to Friday at this week's festival. What, in your mind, Paul, is the best bookmaker promotion that you've seen so far for this week?
Well, there's loads. As you know, it's so competitive, Cheltenham, for the bookies, and they're all trying to get your business and get you using them from the outset. So yeah, I've gone through a few. In fact, if you look at Steve's preview, or if you go to the homepage on Golf Betting System, there's a link through to the full list that I've put together, and there'll be more that come out between now and when it all kicks off at 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. So we'll keep it fresh as the new.
Yeah, for listeners, I'll put a link on under description in Podbean as well to our Cheltenham Festival page on the Golf Betting System that Paul's going to constantly keep updated. What's that killer deal, Paul?
Yeah, I think everyone likes to get the festival off to a start, and the one that really caught my eye is the William Hill offer on the Supreme, which is the first race of the festival, where they'll double your winnings up to £100 or €100 in cash if you win on the first race, as a nice little bonus to keep you ticking over. So that's on win or each way bets, wow. If you have a result on the first race with your first bet that you place on that particular race, then away you go. You're getting yourself a
withdrawable hard cash.
There's other ones. I've listed some other ones which are as free bets and a lesser amount, but that's the one that really caught my eye, because everyone likes to get off to a flying start and get a nice little Brucey bonus with it as well. So
I think I'll be crediting my William Hill count tonight just to get on board. What's it called? Kashelnikov or something?
He's
a tennis player, isn't he?
Kalashnikov, I think you're thinking of, Steve.
That's the one. That's the winner. You can tell that I'm really up to speed with my horse races.
Yeah,
he's the winner.
So there you go, guys. Back Kalashnikov.
Yeah, don't back Kalashnikov. That's the one. Right. Okay. What did we make of the two tournaments last week? I'll start with you, Barry. It was fascinating stuff in terms of Tiger last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to contain the excitement. We got everything we really wanted out of a Tiger Woods performance, except him lifting the trophy at the end of the day. And even without that, I'm not too disappointed. It's almost, I mean, you can almost suspend belief at the moment of what he's actually doing. You know, the swing speeds, all parts of the game look in pretty good nick. And even when he's, I think the thing that's impressing me the most about him is his recovery shots.
Yeah.
It's just showing imagination, you know, control of the golf ball. He's, you know, it's really impressive. It's like something out of a movie what we're watching. Like, by all rights, he should not be doing what he's doing right now. And it's just so much fun. And it seems like the whole sports world are getting involved with it. You know, I heard the TV ratings were some of the best ever for a Saturday or in the last 10 years or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. It's just really exciting having him around. And I mean, if it wasn't for Paul Casey putting in a worldie of a round yesterday, you know, Tiger Woods could have his 80th PGA Tour win. So it's amazing how.
Do you think there's still that aura there, Barry? Because clearly, you know, yesterday, he's playing with Brandt Snedeker, who desperately needs a result to get into the, you know, into the world match play. You know, if he won the tournament, he's going to be at the Masters, which at the moment he's outside. And Snedeker absolutely fell apart. Now, do you think that was purely the, you know, the pressure in general got to Snedeker, or is there that aura that, you know, I'm playing with Woods, we're going, you know, we're fighting it out for a tournament again, and it's all becoming a bit of a nightmare for these guys? Because Snedeker was around when Tiger was in his pomp.
Yeah, and it's not like the Tiger that we saw, say, before Christmas, who was, you know, swapping bogeys for birdies. This, you get the feeling that there's just, it's at that Tiger level that everybody remembers. Or, I mean, look, that's the Copperhead course in Innsbruck is by no means a pushover and can easily whip somebody around like it did to Snedeker yesterday. But, you know, there's... Nobody's had this, you know, Tiger in fine fettle feeling to come up against him for the last few years. So it's almost like a refreshing of a memory, but a bad memory for these guys because they have to go up against the greatest golfer ever.
Yeah,
It's really exciting, and just it's almost like we're kind of holding our breath, just saying, please let it last.
We were all concerned, weren't we, about the scrambling game and his driving accuracy when he came back to the tour this year. But the scrambling is top notch, and I noticed last week at Copperhead all of a sudden the driving's becoming a hell of a lot more accurate as well. The ball striking, he's been top 10 in ball striking in the last two events on two particularly nasty golf courses.
It's really exciting. I mean, look, Phil winning a couple of weeks ago, Tiger playing like he is now, Augusta just around the corner. You know, it seems like the elder generation is just kind of putting their stamp on the tour at the moment, and it's kind of exciting. And you almost wonder, is this the kind of thing that will motivate the younger guys to really get themselves into good shape heading to Augusta now in 3 weeks' time?
Guys, there's a lot of players who fancy their chances at Augusta, isn't there? You know, there's so many that have either got decent form around there in the past or have shown, you know, the kind of game that you'd expect to fit to Augusta, and then have started to come to life over the last few weeks. It's going to be a right old shootout. And was it just 3 weeks?
We know who wins at Augusta, don't we, Paul? We know. he's playing this week, and it isn't Tiger.
You got your crystal ball out. Yeah.
We know who's winning.
Is this so long as he stays away from slippery staircases?
No, it's not that individual either.
It's quite funny, you know, two guys who you'd fancy quite a lot for Augusta are a little bit off the boil at the moment, Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be very interesting to see what they do, you know, over the next couple of weeks to just show any hints of something that, you know, and give them a bit of confidence going into Augusta. You don't want to be going into Augusta, you know, with doubts about your game.
No.
You sometimes see this with players, don't you? You know, we've been discussing since the turn of the year the fact that Jordan Spieth has got a new putting stroke. it's quite a detailed change. He keeps talking about it in interviews. And he's struggling with his putting. But his ball striking up until like the last appearance had been good. And then all of a sudden, that fell apart last week as well. And you just see, you know, he's in a lot of trouble, Jordan. And I you can say exactly the same thing for Rory. So, you know, you've got two there at the head of the market who are struggling. But then you've got the likes of Phil on a charge. You've got Jason Day playing some great golf. Woods is getting back towards his pomp. Bubba Watson's a winner this year. You know, there's so Justin Rose is playing superb golf. Sergio, you know, he finished well last night, didn't he? You know, he's hitting the ball very, very cleanly for a defending champion. There's a lot with big chances.
There's not many players out there who are striking the ball as well as Sergio is at the moment. It's it's an intriguing tournament that we're going to have in a few weeks' time, because there are so many people you could make a case for. And these guys,
and Justin Thomas, of course, who's playing some of the best golf that we've seen.
We haven't even talked about John Rahm.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy.
That guy could win the Masters. There's absolutely no two ways about it. Ricky Fowler. You know, it's gonna be a right old conundrum to try and unravel in a few weeks. But.
We also need to highlight for listeners your excellent effort last week at the Indian Open as well, Paul. You got clearly beef got into a playoff at 33-1 for you. I was out on my bike actually. And I was constantly updating my phone, praying that he would win.
He got so close. He played so well on that final day, and you know, actually for the full 4 days he was really good. I go back to he made a double on his final hole on Thursday. Trying to get a little bit too cute with the shot, just a little wedge shot into the green, from the semi, and you know, you take that away, he wins the tournament, 6 under final round, bogey free around that track, that's no mean feat, and you know, whilst he put a brave face on it at the end, he was disappointed, and so he should be, because he played well enough to win that tournament. You can't take it away from Matt Wallace, because you know, he went out in the playoff. He played, you know, an incredible shot at the right time to get himself 10, 12, 15 feet, wherever he was from the pin in two on a par five, and got the job done. But yeah, Beef played well. Disappointing. If he'd have thrown it away, as I said to you before, if you know, if you have a player who's in a great position and they collapse on the final day or final few holes, it's very, very frustrating. And Beef didn't do that. He put himself in a position to be able to win that tournament from a few shots back as well. You bear in mind, people like Grillo earlier on in the tournament, it got himself into a 5-6 shot lead. He was miles ahead, and you know, these players have got to get their head into a right space where they can they can continue to plod away and pick up shots here and there on a very tricky track. And he did that all the way through the week. I'm very impressed with him. Shame he didn't win, absolutely. But yeah.
Two questions. Where do you see Matt Wallace heading in 2018? I know we were talking a lot about Jordan Smith being a big figure this season in terms of his development. He's flattered to deceive so far. I know we're only in March. Where can you see Matt Wallace getting to logically this year? And secondly, if there's a track up and coming for Beef that where he can be super competitive, where do you think that might be in the next month or two?
I struggle with Wallace. I picked him up on his first win on the back of his Alps tour form, but I struggle a little bit to classify him, and that probably means he's a very good player, because I didn't have him down as with any decent form on Bermuda grass greens. When he won before in Portugal, he kicked off with a 10-under opening round. And, you know, when you're looking at that and saying, well, is that the kind of blueprint for him to win a tournament? Well, if that's the case, then an Indian Open where everyone's making doubles and trebles and struggling, that doesn't fit. Mm. So, you know, I'd looked at him because he'd shown a little bit of form, but I'd kind of pushed him off my radar. He won on that tricky course. Suggests to me he's a very versatile player. He was prolific on the Alps Tour, and I know it's a big step up going to the European, but I don't know, we'll see where he goes. And as to Jordan Smith, he had glandular fever at the back end of last year, and I think he struggled a little bit to get his head back or get his form back since then. So I do expect him to pull it back round, and I expect Jordan Smith to be a very strong player from the European side going forward as well. Back to beef, I think somewhere like Le Golf National would suit him. You know, these trickier tracks.
Wentworth play potentially?
Wentworth's probably not as tricky as it needs to be for beef. It's interesting listening to him in some of the interviews where he was talking about how a more demanding test equalises things in his mind and his game for against some of the other players who've got better, you know, longer games or better putting or whatever it is, and a more rigorous test in his mind kind of equalises the field, and then it's down to him and his ability to kind of overcome the opponents there and then at the time. And you know, he came very close to proving that over the weekend. And he shouldn't be downhearted from what he did. He's, you know, it was a very good effort.
He's not got the putting game to be competitive on the PGA Tour at the moment.
No.
So you know, on a tough track like a Le Golf National, or you can see the fact that, you know, if you're pounding greens in regulation, that you know, that really does level up the playing field. You can see where he's heading with that kind of mental approach.
If you're looking at a course or an event where a winning score is going to be, you know, 10 under thereabouts, you know, or slightly less, I think it's got to come into your considerations. He's clearly focused. He's focused this year on improving his game. You know, last year was a bit of a party year. This year's far more focused on, you know, moving his game forward, going forward. So I'll keep a close eye on him. There are, you know, Morocco's another one that might well suit him because it's another, you know, tricky test.
Are they playing Sicily again this year as well?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head because there have been some changes to the schedule over the last few weeks.
Because anything that's blustery and, like you said, sub 10 under, that's his kind of game, isn't it?
Yeah. So there will be some good chances for him at the back end of the year going forward. So. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him win, particularly with his game that is in a decent state at the moment. So, yeah, I'll keep the faith with him, I think, when it suits going forward.
Right, let's talk Bay Hill then. We've got one tournament this week, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I think, you know, if you're a regular golf punter, you know, you've been involved in golf betting for a considerable length of time, Bay Hill and the Arnold Palmer Invitational is one of those PGA Tour events that is on a slightly higher level than a lot of them. It has invitational status, although that doesn't tend to mean a lot technically these days on the PGA Tour, but an invitational status effectively meaning that a player that wins one of these gets a 3-year exemption rather than two. And it's level with, in that case, Jack Nicklaus's tournament at Muirfield Village, the Memorial. So it's got that sort of status to it, and no, any tournament that's linked to Arnold Palmer, especially now that he's passed away, I think that has a lot of respect within the golfing profession. And you know, you've still got a field, and this is the thing: the tournament in its location at the moment, which is between two WGCs, and you know, the week before a WGC at the match play, even though, you know, it's in that position, you've still got Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Henrik Stenson, Hideki Matsuyama, Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood. You know, it's a strong field. I haven't mentioned the likes of Bubba Watson. You know, it's a great field, and it's a tough golf course. Let's just go into some of the detail. 7,419 yards. We're looking at four par fives around this par 72 format. Three of those par fives are over 550 yards. It's got a particularly tough set of par threes. The par fours are no gimme either. And you kind of get the feeling with the course that when it's soft, as it was in 2015 and 2016, It's very gettable. I know that in 2015, when everyone, it was 36th of 52 courses in terms of its difficulty. 2016, again, when he did the, this was Jason Day's year, wasn't it? It was 28th out of 50. But then last year, when it played firm, it played fast, it had 4 inches of rough, and the wind was blowing on the Sunday up to 25 miles an hour, all of a sudden it ranked at 70, just under 73 strokes average, which was the ninth most difficult course on the PGA Tour last year. So this year, what do we expect? Well, there's a little bit of rain. I was saying this all about rain last week and wind in the forecast, and it was complete and utter rubbish. It was as placid as you like, wasn't it? But anyway, they're suggesting there's some potential rain tonight, Monday night. We're recording this Monday tea time over in the UK. Monday night in the States, there might be some rain. But apart from that, it is clear, it is blue skies, it's dry. And the pretty much the whole of Florida and this particular part, you know, of Orlando has been very dry in the build-up. So, again, I think it's going to be very much like PGA National. I think it's going to be very much like Copperhead. I think you're going to have firm fairways. You're going to have firm greens. But it's going to be tranquil this week. There is pretty much, it's light winds on Thursday, light winds on Sunday, and Friday and Saturday, it looks like they're virtually playing in some kind of indoor arena. There's no wind whatsoever. But as we saw last year for 54 holes, if there's not particularly any wind, but it's firm and fast, this will still prove to be a challenge. For me, I think it's going to be kind of a mid-score event. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the kind of score that we saw with Tiger and his pomp when like that 13, 14 under wins this. I don't think it's going to be a complete birdie shoot as we saw a couple of years ago when it was soft at sort of 19 under. That isn't going to happen this week.
And they've grown the rough up, haven't they? If I'm reading that right.
Yeah, rough's up. The course had a renovation in after the 2015 renewal. And they basically cut down loads of trees. They made the fairways really, really wide. But if you miss fairways, and it is possible, you're faced with 4 inches of rough. You're also now faced with, of course, plenty of water in play. You know, it's your typical Florida golf course, water in play on 8 of the holes. And as part of that renovation or redesign, whatever you want to call it, they took away a lot of the rough backstops, as they used to call them. So effectively, a lot of the greens now have Augusta-like runoff areas, which again has had added to that level of difficulty. So you can hit a particularly good shot. You don't get the level of receptiveness off the green. That shot fires through, and you know you've got a really ridiculous chip shot on the way back. So that doesn't help scoring either. The fact that they've made it a little bit more Augusta-like in terms of the setup around the greens in a lot of circumstances. So they've toughened the course in reality if the conditions allow for the course to really play to its optimum. And what I mean by that is firm and fast conditions, which I think we're going to have this year. So it should be a very good test of golf in my estimation this week. I don't think we're going to see 17, 19 under wind like Day and Every did in 15 and 16. I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing, like I said, 13, 14 under. What thoughts have you got around the course? Is this a course that you've got memories of, Barry, over the years?
Well, I mean, I suppose mostly a blurring of Tiger doing various winning shots on the 18th green. It's exciting. Like, what is he? It's 8 times he's won here, I think. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be
79 PGA Tour victories, and over 10% of them have come on this golf course.
He kind of likes it. It's going to be.
He doesn't mind it.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting this week. I mean, conceivably, Tiger Woods could be, people's captain pick or, their top pick for their fantasy leagues. He could be their one and only bet. And it's really hard. Like, all the evidence is there to back that up and as a good decision. So, I don't know. I'm just looking forward to him outside of the betting side of things, but just as a spectacle, just watching him being involved and hopefully in the mix again come Sunday, because it's kind of an extra level of excitement in golf that I wanted to happen, you know, with Tiger being back, but I didn't fully believe it could happen to this extent at this stage. So it's like a freebie. It's a real bonus. I'm looking forward to seeing the golf course. You know, firm and fast golf courses, they're good to watch. You know, interesting to see how the guys take on a golf course. They, you know, even though it's 7,400 yards, it'll be a lot of times they won't be taking a driver off the tee. So it'll be interesting to watch them. You know, figure out how to get a good score around here if it's playing in tough conditions.
It's interesting you say that, because you can see that in the statistics. For such a long golf course, played at sea level, so it plays to its true, you know, its true length. This isn't a Chapulte Peck or anything like that. The average driving distance of all drives around here is always some of the shortest that we see on tour. So I think you get a lot of positional holes where effectively bombers don't really get much of an advantage, because it's a little bit like PGA National in that respect. A lot of the holes you're playing to a position on the fairway.
Yeah, wasn't it when Jason Day won around here, he just two ironed it to pieces, didn't he?
Yeah, that was
an absolute, just a beautiful display of ball striking with his driving iron. It was amazing to watch that tournament, what he did. So, yeah, it's interesting to see courses that force the pros into a bit of strategy, and it's not just a bomb and gouge, because if you try that this week, I think you're going to be in a lot of trouble with 4-inch Bermuda rough and firm greens.
I'll take you through the top 10 of this week's predictor model. We've got time this week because clearly we're covering just the one tournament. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk, we have a predictor model that is free of use for everybody. Lots of variables in there, skill sets, history, putting on Bermuda grass, if they're classical golf course, positive players. There's a multitude of different stats in there. So it's a really good tool statistically for being able to take the big field and slim it down. There's also the key stats in there: jack driving accuracy, greens in regulation, par 3, 4, 5, performance, putting, whatever, scrambling. Top 10 that I've produced. Paul and I always produce our own model that we publish each and every week. 10 is Brian Harman. 9 is Kevin Kisner. 8 is Jason Kokrak. 7 is Patton Kaziah. 6 is Bubba Watson. 5 is Ricky Fowler. 4 is Tiger Woods. 3 is Zach Johnson. 2 is Jason Day. And number 1 is Justin Rose. And he's leading by just over 200 points in total. So a total of just under 1,800. Next in line is Jason Day at 1,570. So it's quite a substantial gap there between first and second, with Zach Johnson and Tiger Woods in third and fourth places there. How do we want to do this? I've got 4 players this week that I think are going to go well, and I've got some kind of commentary around what I think we need to be looking for in terms of previous winners. So do you want me to go through a little bit of that commentary, and then we'll start going through our selections for the week? Is that
go for it.
I tell you what I think, and you know, it's a tournament that happens each and every year, plays the same golf course, so we haven't got any of this trouble, you know, you get with the majors of different courses or courses moving and whatever like. The pattern I see is quite stable. I look for players who have got the following. Because the par fours seem to be particularly hard here, I look for players that have got excellent par 4 scoring average for the season to date. Par 5s need to be scored upon, so I look for birdie or better on par 5s. I'm also looking for excellent wedge players. And the key number I see, and this seems to happen, well, it does happen, year in, year out, players that are excellent in terms of proximity from 150 to 175 yards. I'm also looking for players that have got a rather hot putter at the moment. So, just taking people from their last recent performances and who've been putting well, particularly on Bermuda grass, we have Sam Burns, who's putting the lights out. Emiliano Grillo had a great putting performance at PGA National before he disappeared to India and putted again very well. Jamie Lovemark putted well at PGA National. Luke List putted well at PGA National. And we know that Alex Noren putted particularly well. Look at last week, and the guys that putted particularly well on Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass. Don't forget, it was Tiff Eagle both at PGA National and also last week at the Valspar Championship. Putters that did well last week, and I think you'll be particularly shocked if I said to you that Justin Rose was third for strokes gained putting last week at the Valspar Championship. And that's something you do not expect to read out very often about Justin Rose. The other guy that really jumps off the page from last week in terms of his putting was once again Sam Burns, who was 2.6 strokes across the tournament in terms of strokes gained over the average in the field. Yeah. That's a phenomenal putting.
He's a really good prospect, Burns, I think. I think he will
100 to 1 this week.
I haven't backed him yet, but he's certainly on my shortlist. I had him on a top 20 bet last week, which he should have been far better than top 20 in the end. But he's still learning his trade. But he's got a win in him, I think, this season at some point.
Guys, just
now. You carry on, Barry.
Yeah, just a question. When it comes to somebody, do you see trends when it comes to guys who are on a particularly hot streak on one aspect of their game? Do those tend to come abruptly to a stop, or do they kind of tail off? Or, you know, I mean, how good are guys at maintaining, vastly above average, say, putting or iron play? Do you notice any trends throughout the years?
I think it varies by player. You know, if you've got like a Troy Merritt who can be missing cuts for 7 events and then all of a sudden, you know, he's challenging. He actually did well around here a couple of years ago, Troy Merritt. It's virtually impossible to grab a stat around someone like him or James Hahn type. You always know you're in trouble with James Hahn when you're actually tipping him up because his stats look half reasonable, because he usually misses the cut. Soon as he goes 7 straight missed cuts, he tends to win at something like Quail Hollow, a big tournament.
Don't say that, Steve. I think he's another one who's on my shortlist this week, James Hahn.
I think he varies. These are the stats or the trends that I've noticed over the last 4 renewals here. Now, Matt Every winning here in 2015 at 300 to 1, I think he was, wasn't he? Statistically, you'd never have seen it coming, but clearly, if you worked out that he's a Bermuda grass positive putter, clearly got on well with the golf course and fancied a 300 to 1 dabble. And I know that lots and lots of people on our Facebook group were on him that week. He was so obvious, it was frightening. But take that kind of, with statistics or trend, you always get a spot that doesn't follow. But listen to this. When he won in 2014, he was second for strokes gained putting on his previous performance, appearance, which had been at the Valspar the week before. Jason Day, when he won here in 2016, he was sixth for strokes gained putting at Doral at the WGC, which again was played on Tiff Eagle. So I think he finished something like 20th or something like that, but he was clearly putting the lights out. And even Mark Leishman last year, who statistically was had some great stats, but actually his results were 22nd and 20th and all of this. And I think the week before he was something like 99th for green in regulation. You wouldn't have picked him. But he had been strokes gained putting. He was ninth or tenth on his previous appearance, again at PGA National, on Tiff Eagle. So, you know, by my reckoning, you got Every, Day, Leishman, all in the top 10 for strokes gained putting on their previous performance on Tiff Eagle greens. So that's quite a definitive trend there. And if you go back to the years of Tiger and his pomp, There's similar statistics there as well, where, you know, he finished second at the Honda Classic and all of a sudden, wham, bam, gets to a course that he absolutely thrives on and loves and knows every nook and cranny, and he dominates the field. So I've been quite particular in the way that I've gone through this week. I've literally looked for guys that have been very, very hot with the putter on their last performance. Now, that may not be on Bermuda grass, and that isn't the case for two of my tips. But even with someone like Kevin Kisner, if you remember last year, was winning by two or three on Sunday at the turn. He'd putted the lights out on his previous performance when he played at Chapultepec. Mm. So there's something in this about someone with a very, very hot putter immediately on the appearance before they arrive here at Bay Hill. And I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that if you look at the statistics for this golf course, when you go down to brass tacks, year in, year out, and it doesn't overly matter if it's soft or firm, getting close to the hole here is particularly difficult. And I've gone through the detail of that in my preview. Getting close to the hole is so difficult that I think you need to be very, very strong, you know, with the putter as you're arriving at the golf course to be able to convert the amount of distance chances that you're going to have to actually win the tournament. Yep.
That makes sense.
It does, to a certain extent, doesn't it? I'm trying to find on the preview here where I've got my proximity number. Bay Hill also ranked in the top three toughest courses last year, 2017, for proximity to hole. And that trend of being, you know, within the top seven or eight for proximity to hole is year in, year out. So I do think that you've got to be putting very, very well right here, right now, to actually win this tournament. I don't think it's a pure ball striker's test, if you see what I mean. I think you've got to be able to make
that. Oh, no, it's scorable, isn't it? You can see that from some of the winning scores that we've seen over the last few years, and particularly since they've widened it up a bit. But interesting to see how it plays with the rough, supposedly thicker than it has been this year. But I expect they'll still be able to make birdies, particularly from the fairway.
So for me, that pulls in the likes of Emiliano Grillo, who, as we've said already on the show, he's putting so well at the moment. He's a definite opportunity. The likes of Sam Burns, who has been fourth in strokes gained putting at PGA National, was, as we said, was top for strokes gained putting last week. Now, yeah, as you said, Barry, you know, is that going to fall off a cliff or is that going to continue? You know, logically, we don't know. But, you know, it's a fair guess that he's played well at two very tough Florida golf courses. You know, is he going to do it for 3 weeks on the trot? He could be a Jordan Spieth type, you know, that literally hits the tour and manages to earn so much money from top 10 performances. Because don't forget, I think this is an invitational. He's on a sponsor's invite. But the next time they play Houston, he's also going to be playing that because he had a top 10 from last week.
Yeah, he finished 12th in the end. So,
he did. Yeah, so, you'll get a sponsor.
I expect he will. Yeah, no doubt. I wouldn't be surprised if he earns enough dough in the next few weeks to get himself a proper card. But yeah, we'll see.
Exactly, and then be in the FedEx Cup for the rest of the year. So he's that kind of talent, isn't he? So. Where are you at, Barry? What do you think in terms of selections this week?
Well, I actually also, Grillo kind of stuck out to me. Kind of primarily because of a motivation point of view, based on what happened last week, being so far clear after, you know, was it after two rounds? He was absolutely sailing away with the tournament. And then, you know, had a tragic third round and just, you know, ends up finishing sixth, but you know he's had an eighth and a sixth in his last 3 weeks. He's got two very good results here the last 2 years since the courses, you know, the changes were made to the course. He's a 17th and 7th last year, so you know, carrying good form in, going to a place where he's very comfortable. And it should also be noted that 7th last year included a third round 78, and he was only four shots off the lead. Now the third round last year was tricky enough for some people, and others handled it quite well. So, you know, maybe if he can get his head sorted out in his third rounds this week, it could be a decent shout.
He's out of all the majors as well, so he's got to perform right now, and you can see he is. Yeah, He's definitely outside the match play for the next week. That draw's been made. He's outside of that, and he's outside of the Augusta. You know, the top 50 for Augusta. So you know, it's here and now for him. You know, if he wants to start playing in the majors this year and the big tournaments, he's got to perform. I think he was 17th and 7th here on two appearances, isn't he? Mm. We know he lives in Florida. So this is his kind of golf course that he would be practicing on week in, week out.
Yeah. Doesn't the fact that he doesn't convert these opportunities, or like last week against a relatively weak field, you know, I forget, he was either 5 or 6 shots clear. I think he was around about 2-1 on to win the tournament at that stage. You know, you've got 36 holes to go. And it just went backwards further and further and further. It's not the first time he's done it. I forget which tournament it was. Going back a few years ago, but he was leading by a few shots and shot something like a 9 on the first hole of the Sunday. There's something that clearly plays with him mentally, and I think it's going to prevent him, until he gets over that, from winning tournaments and winning the kind of tournaments that he should do because of the talent the boy's got. He missed a three foot putt to win on the PGA Tour, I recall, from a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, that was at Puerto Rico, I think.
That's right, yeah. You know, these things, once you know, they can affect players really quite deeply, and you know, you've got to try and get over that. And you know, I personally don't think I could. Actually, it's not a bet for me any day of the week, I don't think, because I can't see him getting over the line until there's a few things that he's cracked mentally. I don't think. Each for their own.
I think 7 places each way with Ball Sports, 66. If you're looking at him as a straight each way punt, someone that you might be able to likely trade or do something with him, I think he's a decent shout this week, Greer. I haven't put him in my tips for the reason that you said, because he just doesn't convert. But then I wouldn't have picked Paul Casey last week. And, you know, every dog has his
price. Casey proves the rule, doesn't he, to say.
The player that I do see at Griot's level in the betting, who I've already seen is a sea of blue, is Kiradesh Afibanrat. Yeah. And he's finished 6th here on his two previous appearances here. And the numbers that I see about Afibanrat that really kind of excite me are, he was, when he finished 6th here in 2015, he was 3.18 strokes gained putting for the week, which was the best in the field. And then when he came back here in 2016, lo and behold, he was almost 2 strokes gained putting across the field when he finished 6th here again. I will warn, those two renewals were particularly soft from a course perspective. But he clearly gets on well with the format. Now, you can back me up on this, boys. My understanding on the why he's playing, he hasn't got a full PGA Tour card. He's clearly in the world's top 50. He won last week in Brunei didn't he? And he's playing next week at the World Match Play. So in my mind, he's kind of doing what, say, Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood did last year, which is trying to earn enough money this year to earn a full card for next year. Am I in the right headspace?
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? I think while he's playing, he's won 3 times in his last, 10 starts, something like that, worldwide. He's playing some cracking golf. Why not? Why not try and, you know, accumulate as much, you know, as many points or as much money or whatever it is that the initial need is, while he's playing well? And fair play to him for coming out and having a go. I think he's got a great chance this week. He's one of the two players that I've backed early today. And as you said, he's got a couple of top 6 finishes here. You talked about par 5 scoring as well, and if you look at his par 5 performance over the, you know, this hot spell of form that he's had over the last couple of months or 3 months or so, he's been hitting and scoring very deeply in the par 5s. When he's playing well, fantastic putter. Going back to the back end of last year, we're talking about Bermuda greens on the Earth course in the Tour Championship in Dubai. He was 2nd for putting there, 1.63 putts per GIR. So you know, we know he can putt really, really well. And when he's playing well, he hits lots of greens too. There's an awful lot to like about him.
He finished really strongly in the WGC a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
he did
fifth. Yeah, he finished fifth in Mexico. You know, the price on offer, there's scope for an each way finish there.
In that particular fourth round, he was 2.4 strokes gained on this putting again, which was eighth in the field. Yeah. So it was kind of level with Tyrrell Hatton's putting in that final round.
When he came back, because he was playing well at the back end of last year, and when he started the new year again after the Eurasia Cup, his putting wasn't quite right. And we saw him a few times on the European Tour, but he's started to step that up again now. And whilst we can't see what he did last week in Brunei, stats-wise,
he was clearly making some putts. What did he win at? What was the winning score?
The winning score was 261, so that was either 23 or 27 under par. Unless it may have been a par 70, in which case it was 19. But whichever way you look at it, 261 is a pretty low score. So he didn't have much to beat there, but you've still got to be able to put the ball in the hole to make that kind of score. I'll tell you
what else jumps out at me here, and this is purely observational. You think of players that have won here at Bay Hill. Ernie Els, Tiger Woods, just the eight times. Mark Leishman, he won here last year. Jason Day, the year before. Now, if you think Open Championship and you think St Andrews, that's not a bad list of players there. Because Leishman made the playoff, didn't he, in 2015 at the Open. Yep. Jason Day missed it by a shot. Tiger Woods clearly has won the Open Championship at St Andrews, and Ernie Els, you know, he's a Open Championship god who's played well at St Andrews over the years. And last year, think it through, Tyrrell Hatton was in the top five here. We know how well Tyrrell Hatton goes at St Andrews when he plays there in the Dunhill Links. So I don't think that's a bad barometer either. It's players that have got a half-decent record around St Andrews.
There could be a bit of a correlation there, couldn't there?
So what that is, and don't forget as well, even crazily, more, you know how crazy these things get, Thorbjørn Olsen has got like a top five or six at this tournament. Yep. And he's won.
Yeah, he's won the Dunhill Links.
The Dunhill Links. So that's just one of those quirks. Now, if I'm right here, Afi Barnrat was second or third in a Dunhill Links a couple of years ago as well, yeah?
Yeah, quite likely.
Third or fourth, something like that. So, yeah. Throw that one in the mix.
Interesting.
Okay. I'll tell you what I'm going for. You won't be surprised. I cannot avoid Tiger Woods. So I've gone 4 points to win on Tiger Woods. I've managed to snitch a bit of 7-1. Every time a bookmaker put him up today at 7-1, it instantly went in by half a point.
Did you see that stat about Lefty when he won his first title for 1,687 days?
Yeah, did you see that on Twitter?
Yes, very good. Brilliant research.
Yeah, and then this Sunday at Bay Hill will be exactly 1,687 days since Tiger Woods won his last event. So
I shouldn't talk stats all the time because I sound like an American. Okay. I've got a bomb for later on as well. Just to throw that in, a bomb. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But when he won here in 2012, Tiger, he was 1.38 strokes gained on his putting that week, which was kind of third or fourth in the field. The year he won here in 2013, he gained three strokes per round putting on the field. And you won't be surprised, he won. He beat Justin Rose by two shots. In my mind, it's almost as if he's kind of, it's just like you said, boys, it's just going to happen. I don't know, you just feel that it's going to happen. And you can look at the stats and say, well, actually, he's not perfect for this. But think about where he's played as well. He's played at Torrey Pines, which was in horrible fast conditions. He played at Riviera, a golf course that he can't stand, and he only managed to get round there for two rounds, didn't he, before he missed the cut. He's then played PGA National, which is a dog-tough course, and last week he played Valspar again, which is a hard golf course. And do you know where he ranks PGA Tour scoring average so far this season?
Yeah, pretty good.
Oh, no, better than that.
No.
Fifth. And that's what you said, Barry, towards the top of the show. He's playing such good golf. He's managing his game so well. You know, if he misses a fairway, he recovers. If he gets the ball to, you know, within a decent length of the hole, he's making putts. He's converting putts. He's making those, you know, those key sort of 7, 8, 9 foot putts to, you know, to make par, keep that momentum going. He's just doing everything so well at the moment. He just seems to me that he's going to win, and I'm not a win only backer. But the only, you know, when I've used win only bets to my advantage in the past, they've always been on Tiger. So I'm in on Tiger this week.
Just a question. Do you remember the last time you had Tiger Woods tipped up as a win only bet?
Yeah, I do. It was here.
How long ago?
2013.
No, like 5 years.
If there's a place that is going to win, then this is the most logical, isn't it?
Well, it could.
Here you go, Barry. This is interesting, right? The year he won here in 2012. I tipped him up. He was coming off. He hadn't won for over 3 years, and there'd been all the Ferrari and whatever, and he had injuries and stuff. But he won his World Challenge event in 2011 in the autumn. He then, 2012, he started the European Tour at Abu Dhabi and got stared down by Robert Rock. He was then 15th at Pebble, 2nd at PGA National, and he withdrew from the World Golf Championship at Doral because he had trouble with his Achilles. And he was 8-1 that year, hadn't won for over 3 years, and I tipped him up, win only, and he won. And he beat Graham McDowell by 5 shots that time. Guess what price he was? He was 8-1 to win that. In 2012.
Yeah.
So 7-1 coming off a second place at the Valspar Championship. And, you know, he looks like he's injury, you know, he looks injury free, yeah, doesn't he?
You don't swing at 129 miles an hour if you're not injury free. Yeah, look, the guy's in great form. I think. So you
could argue that the 7-1 this week is actually a decent price if he was 8-1 in 2012 coming off a WD at Doral. Yeah. And with injury problems, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's factored in the length of time that it's been since he's got himself over the line. And, it remains to be seen. And, you know, if one of the players that I back doesn't win this week, then I hope Tiger wins.
I think it was almost inevitable that he wouldn't win last week because he hasn't been in that Sunday heat for such a length of time. But I tell you what, he'll be so much better equipped this week now that he's been under that pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And enjoyed it. Yeah. Of course he'd enjoy it. He's bound to enjoy it. He's won 79 PGA Tour titles.
But another win now will feel almost fresh to him. And if he wins now after this comeback, having not won in, what, nearly 5 years, he'll mark it down as one of the greatest wins of his career.
Yeah,
so there's that little bit of pressure, that little bit of extra pressure on him because he'll know the importance of getting a win for him. So look, he handled things pretty well last week. He could have been a little bit better on Sunday, maybe a couple of putts, you know, weren't quite running at the hole.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If anybody's going to tweak things just a little bit to make it all work the next week, it's going to be Tiger.
Yeah, he was definitely tight with the putter yesterday, wasn't he? But that's what we're saying. He was bound to be. Because, you know, he's human. And he was under pressure that he hasn't felt for a long period of time. Jason Day is 12-1 this week. You could really raise a great case for him. You can also see Tiger and Jason Day being partnered in the first two rounds. I think that's kind of going to happen. The only thing that puts me off Jason Day this week particularly is the fact that he hasn't played for so long. And as we said earlier, players that have won this in the past have always had a Florida appearance before they come here and win. So for me, Jason Day, I think the last time he played was Pebble Beach. That's a long length of time, really. The other player at the top of the market I haven't been able to avoid, and I do apologise for tipping up two of the top three in the betting. I don't do it very often, and my name isn't Jeremy Chapman. But I couldn't avoid it this week. I've had to go for Justin Rose because I think if there's going to be, the closest challenger to Tiger this week for me is likely to be Justin because he's just putting so well at the moment. And what you see with Justin in the past is, and again, this is in the commentary that you can see, you know, the click through to beneath the in the Podbean description this week in my preview. He tends to, if he has a bad Sunday on a tournament, some of his best ever wins have come when he's actually had a bad Sunday the tournament before, like at the US Open. He won the US Open in 2013, where he'd been in the top two or three at Memorial on the previous appearance, and he goes and wins the US Open. I think with Rose putting so well, as I said, he was third for strokes gained putting last week at Valspar on Tiff Eagle Greens. If he keeps that up again this week, I cannot see him not being a feature, not finishing in the top five. It just won't happen. When he's putting that well, you've got to stick with him.
He does tend to kind of telegraph his victories, doesn't he, with a decent attempt, but yeah, maybe not the best of finishes the week before, and then
You look at his Open Championship record, Paul. I know that he came to the fore when he was an amateur. Yeah, at where was it? Not Muirville. What was the one they played last year? Lytham. Well, if you look at his Open record, the best ever finish apart from that he's ever had was at St Andrews, where he was sixth a few years ago in 2015. He's also had a top three in the Dunhill Links, so that's good enough for me. That's St Andrews for. So Justin Rose is in for me as well. What other guys have you got bigger prices?
I'm going to stick, despite him disappointing me last week, and you as well, Steve. We both had him picked.
Mate, I almost threw my laptop out the window on Thursday afternoon. Cheesed off with a man.
Yeah, so Ryan Moore, coming off a miscut hot streak. His last two appearances here haven't been great. He was 34th last year. He just scraped into the cut the year before. He does have history here with a couple of decent showings a few years back, a 4th and a 12th. So I'm kind of half the reason I'm sticking with him is because I've jumped off golfers I've backed, and then they've burnt me the next week by going well. You know, It's kind of a part sticking with it, see what happens. And, you know, the fun part is this week he's available at even higher odds. So I've taken him on Skybet at 80 to 1. And
nice price.
They're paying eight places this week, 150 odds. So that's not quite market best on price, but I thought I'd take the eight places.
Yeah, there's a little bit of 100 to 1 out there as well with Betfred, six places, so 50 odds, yeah. Moore's the kind, isn't he? He's a classical golf course player. Yeah, and if he clicks, he clicks. The thing I couldn't understand about him, he topped the greens in regulation at PGA National, yeah? And then last week, he was like, he couldn't hit a green for love nor money. Such disparity.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, calling golf tournaments is just such an easy science, isn't it? So anyway, let's see if the faith is rewarded by sticking with him. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Well, he's in desperate need again. He's another, isn't he?
Yeah,
he needs to perform, which often works around here. Who are you with, Bob?
The only other player that I've backed so far, other than Barmrat, is Matt Every. Now, you know, it's a complete punt because the bloke's playing, on the face of it, some pretty poor golf. But I back Matt virtually every week for first round leader. And if there's an event where he could go out and be first round leader, and I will back him first round leader this week as well. If there's an event where he could go out and produce a first round score, and he could potentially hang about and get himself over the line, this is the one. He's won it twice in the past. Actually, if you dig through, his form looks pretty poor. But if you go back to 2016 when he defended, his form was equally poor that year.
Oh, he's abysmal. Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
he was 300 to 1 that year. He's 250 at the moment. But if you dig through, actually, he's got a couple of rounds of 69 over the last couple of starts on tough tracks. You talked about the Sony Open correlation. He opened with a 65 there early in the season. Got 66, 67 at the career builder, and you know, interspersed with a couple of poor rounds. I think there's something there. He just hasn't been able to put three rounds together, let alone four rounds together so far this season. But you know, sometimes these players come back to a course where they've got decent memories, and you know, things have obviously worked. They feel comfortable in that particular surroundings, and I think stranger things have happened than Matt Every going into contending in this tournament once again.
Do you think Tiger's a good first round leader bet this week? Just looking at your first round leader stats, 2 first round leaders and 4 each way places. Out of the last 11 tournaments he's played it.
Is he likely to be up there? Yeah, I think so. Is he a good price? No, not in the slightest. And you know,
what are you going to get on him? 10 to 1 first round leader.
I saw 10 to 1 earlier. I mean, the market isn't fully formed, so that you probably get somewhere approaching 14-16 at some point. But even so, for me, the first round leader market isn't a market to go after the favourites in anyway.
I tell you who it is a good market for, and this is for you, Barry, for Griot, because he's played here twice and he was first round leader here one of those years.
Very nice. There's a...
And if you want a guy that, as Paul said, potentially has issues when it comes to, you know, to the pressure points of a tournament, but who we know right now is putting the lights out and likes this golf course, a first-round leader punt on Griot makes a lot of sense.
I see a few available at 60s in places, which is interesting. Yeah, very good shape. That's a nice one to have. I like first-round leader bets, and I do like the every bet as well. Like somebody who's going through bad form, Paul, but like you say, go back to a place they feel comfortable. All of a sudden, you know, the body starts feeling a bit better, the muscles start, you know, performing a little bit better, and the head gets in a better space, and they kind of forget the crap that's gone before. And it's amazing how that can happen to, particularly in golf, you know, guys coming off a rake of missed cuts, they go back to somewhere they've had success before and everything changes.
Yeah. This is the one sport where that is, you know, it's as likely to happen as anything. And we see it time and again. And I don't think he's playing quite as badly as his results would suggest, but... For 250 to 1, I think he's worth a couple of quid.
The other two I've gone for, I couldn't resist Brian Harman at 40 to 1. He was strokes gained putting. He was in the top 10 at Sea Island before Christmas. He was 11th for strokes gained putting at Kapalua. He was also in the top 6 or 7 for strokes gained putting at the Sony Open at Waialae, and at the Mexico Championship, which was his last appearance, he was something crazy like 2nd for strokes gained putting, just behind, can you believe this, Rafa Cabrera Bello, topped strokes gained putting in Mexico. But anyway, yes, he was 2nd for strokes gained putting in Mexico, and I do like the look of his stats. When you look at his course correlation, he plays a lot of golf courses that Matt Every has played well at. He plays well on long golf courses. Don't forget, he was 2nd in the US Open last year at Erin Hills, which was up to 7,700 yards. So if Harmon is going to win a tournament and you get the feeling he must win one soon, you wouldn't want to be on him this week, because you would kind of cut your hands off if you saw that he was 2nd for strokes gained putting last time out, on the basis of what we were discussing earlier on. And my final one, I'm going for a bit of a bomb. I'm going 100 to 1 is available. I'm going 90 to 1 on Patton Kizzire, who again, I think he's overpriced this week.
Yeah, he's won twice in the last 4 months, 6 months or so.
Won twice in the last 4 months, and he charged like a train at the end of the WGC in Mexico a couple of weeks ago. I think he finished 12th in the end. So he's starting to get comfortable now. You can tell in sort of the higher echelons. Yep. He reminds me a little bit of Johnson Wagner, who I tipped up for this in 2012, because he won the Sony Open and went fairly quiet, and then did well at Doral the week before this, or the couple of weeks before, and all of a sudden he came fourth at this tournament here at Bay Hill. Because they're very, very positive Bermuda grass putters. And again, if you look at Kizzire, he was putting the lights out on Bermuda this season. So I just think, you know, a guy that's hitting greens, a guy that bangs it 310 off the tee, I think he'll go well this week, as long as he doesn't get paired with Tiger Woods.
We shall see.
Right then. That's us, I think, yeah?
Yep. Yeah. Best of luck, guys.
best of luck to all of you. Enjoy the Cheltenham Festival this week to all listeners. As we said at the top of the show, we've put a link beneath the description here on Podbean to our Cheltenham Festival Best Bookmaker Promotions. Or, as Paul said, just come to golfbettingsystem.co.uk from our homepage. All week, we're going to be listing all of the best deals that the bookmakers have to offer on a particularly brilliant week for punters when it comes to new customer promotions and just making money effectively. Thanks for your time, Barry, and thanks for your time, Paul. We will see you again next week for, I believe, the World Match Play, which is always one of Paul's favourite tournaments of the week to tip up, or tournaments of the year to tip up. Yeah. Thanks, guys. See you again soon.